Collins. Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, June 28th, 2017. This is my free News and Comment podcast, and every day I select about 10 stories. It runs about half an hour. These are the stories I think are most important in the news today, and I do not pretend that I get to cover everything. There isn't enough time, and there's only one of me. And in case you're wondering, I don't script this News and Comment podcast. I print out a series of articles from various news sources. I mark them up and highlight them, and then I settle back and talk about them. So let's get going. Today, I want to lead with two interesting analytical pieces, one by Robert Perry, the other by Caitlin Johnstone. Both of them suggest that the long-running narrative that Russia interfered in our election in order to help Trump appears to be crumbling. And whether or not there is evidence to support that remains to be seen. It could still surface. But at this point, we don't have any public evidence, and missteps by the corporate media have created a huge opening for Trump, who has been relentless in his assault on the media since he declared his candidacy and got tons of free coverage from the media that he vilified. Well, this gives him traction. And his supporters are looking at this and saying, wow, they do give us fake news. It must all be fake. And so we are out on the cantilever. And you may recall, about a month ago, I invoked the rule of cantilever. And I don't really understand all the science, but we had a deck that was starting to sag and ready to fall down. And in order to rebuild it, we had to rebuild the inner structure of the household in order to support the deck. And the cantilever rule is that the inside buttressing has to be twice as long as the extended unsupported lip, if you will, of a deck. And I believe that without posts or other forms of support, like evidence and named sources, that the narrative about hacking and manipulation of the election, that Trump personally that Putin personally supervised this, well, it is coming under attack. And at this point, Trump has the upper hand. I'm linking to Bob Perry's lengthy and interesting analysis, headlined "Russiagate is no Watergate or Iran-Contra." And I've told Bob Perry personally and in podcasts that he does a great job of rolling in his own history, the experience that he had covering Watergate and Iran-Contra. And he provides context and history that is so often lacking in corporate media analysis. And he reminds me of the celebrated New York Times journalist R.W. Johnny Apple, who used to be tagged to write these kind of contextual big think pieces. So I encourage you to read this, because what Perry painstakingly does is shows you the history of Watergate and Iran-Contra. He argues that both of those events had precursors. In the case of Watergate, Nixon was concerned that his manipulation of the war in Vietnam, the extension of it so that he could win against Hubert Humphrey in 1968, was going to be exposed. That's why he sent the so-called plumbers, including some former CIA spooks, to break into the Watergate not once but twice. They got caught the second time. Likewise, with Ronald Reagan and Iran-Contra, the precursor was the October surprise, the 1980 acts of treason. Well, Bill Casey and the VP candidate George H.W. Bush colluded with the Iranians to keep the American hostages locked up until the election was over and Reagan was the winner. And after Reagan won, we saw the payoff on Inauguration Day as the hostages in Tehran were on a flight back to the United States at the very moment that Reagan was taking the oath of office And we saw that with a split screen. Now, Bob Perry and his colleagues at Consortium News have been dedicated and consistent in their skepticism of the corporate media leak-based reporting, including Rachel Maddow, The Washington Post, The New York Times, that has created for readers and viewers the perception that Russia controlled our election or was able to influence it to a degree that it gave us Trump instead of Hillary. Now, we'll get to some of the domestic causes of the Trump victory a little bit later in the podcast. But I want to turn to Caitlin Johnstone. She, I believe, is Australian by birth. I've been reading her just for 4 or 5 months now. She publishes at Medium. And her headline today reads, "Russiagate is bullshit, and we fucking told you so." Now, I know that's crude, but I think it's warranted. Because I have, myself, had to deal with so many people, Democrats, Hillary fans, people who just accept what is offered in the corporate media. Even one woman on Facebook suggested that I am a Russian agent because I don't believe the narrative that has been offered. So Johnstone writes, "I've been saying for months that we will never, ever see any proof that Trump colluded with the Russian government to steal the 2016 election. If any such evidence existed to be found, it would have been picked up by the vast surveillance networks of the U.S. intelligence community and leaked to the Washington Post in November. We may someday find impeachable evidence of corruption in the Trump administration, and we've arguably already got evidence for impeachable war crimes," she says. And I would agree that there are grounds to impeach Donald Trump. There also does appear now to be an effort to obstruct justice in the firing of James Comey, even if there wasn't an underlying cover-up of the FBI's Russia investigation. And I don't buy into Jimmy O'Keefe's trick videos as much as Johnstone does, but let's let her talk. "Now we have undeniable video evidence from a new Project Veritas hidden camera revelation that the corporate media outlets who've been peddling this lie have been deliberately ignoring, and have been deliberately ignoring other important news stories to focus on Russiagate, not because it's true, not because it's based on facts or evidence, but because it sells." And then she quotes from the interview with a CNN senior health producer. Now, this is where I have a little trouble because, yes, John Bonifield does work for CNN, I believe, in Atlanta. And he recounts a conversation he had with a boss. He said, "My boss yesterday said we're having a discussion about this dental shoot." That's part of his work. And he goes, and he was just like, "I want to, you know what we're up against here?" And he goes, "Just to give you some context, President Trump pulled out of the climate accords, and for a day and a half, we covered the climate accords. And the CEO of CNN said in our internal meeting, he said, 'Good job, everybody, covering the climate accords, but we're done with it. Let's get back to Russia.'" Now, this is certainly embarrassing. And I tend to agree with it. The problem is we can't trust James O'Keefe. And again, this is not a CNN executive. This isn't even somebody who is in New York or Washington. This is an Atlanta-based health producer. And so I don't think that that comment is all that valuable, even though it supports my point of view. Then Johnstone goes on to talk about the flap at CNN, where three journalists were forced to resign yesterday, noting that Sputnik, a Russian state news outlet, was the first to point out that the story had gaping holes. And then Breitbart came along and lowered the boom on CNN. And that's what has left Jeff Zucker sputtering, threatening to fire people if they don't support the triad. We'll tell you about the triad here in just a moment. But let me quote from some of the strong language of Caitlin Johnstone. She says the latest CNN revelations provide a clear window into how this has been happening throughout the corporate media, showing plainly how a fact-free conspiracy theory can be kept alive through sheer force of will, despite the fact that the entire thing is complete and utter bullshit from top to bottom. You hear that, establishment Democrat, she says? Russiagate is bullshit and we fucking told you so. You should have listened to us woke progressives instead of fighting with us. Now everything's a mess and we could be on the brink of World War III because you were asleep at the wheel when real resistance was needed. Democrats, you went insane. While real-life problems that really happened and were really proven not only went unfixed but shouted down as distractions, you got lost in a red-baiting flashback reboot fantasy that was appalling in the 50s. It's 2017. You lost yourselves in madness, and you need to be told, we told you so. Enough of your bullshit now. Sit down, shut up, learn to listen. Welcome back to the real world. We have a lot of work to do. Now, the triad I mentioned is the internal system at CNN that is to ensure that sensitive reporting is accurate and provable before it's released to the public. And the New York Times notes that CNN was forced to apologize after retracting the story about a Russian bank linked to a close ally of Trump, claiming that this was under Senate investigation. And there was this surreal scene where they allowed video in the White House press room as Sarah Sanders, the deputy press secretary, gave Spicer the day off and proceeded to attack the media, inviting them to watch the James O'Keefe trick video without actually mentioning where it is or what it is, just a video that's on the internet. And so these are really strange exchanges. And there's a reporter from a small newspaper group who stood up and talked back to Sanders in a kind of rambling way. And I have to say that Sarah Sanders and Sean Spicer need to go back to grammar school. Their grammar sucks. Their syntax, their choice of words, they don't often appear to understand the words that they're using. At any rate, the triad system should have kicked into gear, which requires an article or a report to be reviewed by lawyers, a standards and practices division. That's a quaint notion from the old days of networks where when I worked for ABC and CBS, almost anything you did had to be approved by standards and practices, and they could be very tough. They were the real censors in network media. Anyway, this then the third check of it is that an editorial team known collectively as The Row does fact-checking and approves anonymous sources, and apparently that leads to the term row being used as a verb at CNN, as in the story has been rowed, so we can go ahead and publish it. Now, Zucker has been very upset about this. He said, our reputation is everything. That's our currency. That's why we have processes in place. And if you don't follow those procedures, you don't work here, period. But this is not the first episode of false reporting by CNN. Earlier in June, they bungled a story predicting that James Comey, the FBI director, was going to testify in a certain manner, and it was inaccurate. Now, I don't know why they put a predictive report on, but that's often the case where when you think you've got something first, you go without fully checking it out. I also want to recommend that you read Caitlin Johnstone's Big Fat Compendium of Russiagate Debunkery. I have linked to that and her article today in the show file for the podcast at peterbcollins.com. Sarah Palin, John McCain's ill-fated running mate from 2008, is piling on. She has, for many years, referred to the mainstream media as the lamestream media, and her lawyers filed a defamation suit today against the New York Times for an editorial that they published on June 14th. This was in reaction to the gunman who shot up the Republican baseball practice, the congressional team, and left Congressman Steve Scalise badly injured. He remains in the hospital. And the editorial said that there was a link between political incitement and the mass shooting in Arizona a few years ago that severely wounded Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. And at the time, many people made the connection that her political action committee in campaign materials circulated a map of targeted electoral districts and put the crosshairs of a gun sight over those districts. And I remember it at the time. It was considered pretty outrageous, and many people thought that that may have triggered the unbalanced individual who took a gun to a town hall meeting in a supermarket parking lot and opened fire, wounding Giffords and many others. So this is something that will play out in the courts. But when you put all this together, Trump and the Republicans now have the advantage. They've got the corporate media back on its heels with, you know, conceded errors, particularly in the case of CNN. And, of course, they will lie about this and exaggerate it. And even when these outlets have published accurate information about Trump's lies, about so many other things, Trump and his allies will be able to dismiss this. And you and I may not believe the dismissals, but too many people, including those who voted for Trump, will lap it up. And here's the real issue that gets lost in all of this. Because the Democrats have shifted the focus to Russia, claiming that the only thing that caused Hillary to lose last year was Russian intervention and the hacking and the WikiLeaks release of emails. And I don't believe that's true. As you may know, I believe that Hillary Clinton probably won the election last November. And I believe that the Democrats failed to properly demand recounts, investigations. They didn't challenge it at the at the certification of the Electoral College or during its meeting. And they had other remedies, none of which was used. And now we see, following up on the successful voter suppression that was used against Democratic voters last year, Republican lawmakers in 31 states have introduced at least 99 bills to restrict access to registration and voting since the beginning of this year. They're on a roll. Chris Kobach, the Kansas Secretary of State, who devised the cross-check list that Greg Palast has exposed, he and his cronies are now thinking up new ways to limit voter participation, particularly by those inclined to vote Democratic. And so in Arkansas, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Montana, North Dakota, they have passed restrictive registration and voting regulations just since January. And we have this problem, if you will, that Democrats ignore, because it forces them to confront their losses and their failures. But there are some 30 states where there exists what's called a trifecta. It's one-party rule. Both houses of the legislature and the governor's mansion controlled by Republicans. And in many cases, they have supermajorities that allow them to pass these laws even after they have been overturned by the courts. Well, then they just pass them again. Make a few tweaks and hope that this suppression law may be more constitutional than the last. And when we look at the array of tactics that were used, I believe that the margin of loss to Hillary Clinton can be found in the gaming of election laws used by Republicans very effectively last year. And, of course, Trump talks about voter fraud, which is virtually non-existent. The most credible study between 2000 and 2014 shows only 31 credible incidents of voter fraud. And yet the photo ID laws and all of these other hurdles are being put in place for people to exercise the franchise to vote? And to me, we should be looking at those suspects before we put all this time and energy into blaming Russia and Putin. And by the way, this is not to say that Putin is a saint, that Russia didn't do anything. I believe they attempt to hack us all the time. But we don't have evidence that that resulted in tipping the election to Trump. And that is the consistent narrative that has been jammed down our throats over the last many months. The New York Times hasn't given up on Trump-Russia. They're exposing that Paul Manafort, who served for, what, 3 or 4 months as Trump's campaign manager, we learned that he didn't even get paid for it. He got forced out last August. And he has now filed, just a few years too late, the required disclosures that his consulting firm had received more than $17 million from a Ukrainian political party with links to the Kremlin. Now, I don't believe this is illegal. This is an American who took job assignments in other countries, and the fact that he was working for Viktor Yanukovych, the corrupt but properly elected leader of Ukraine, I don't believe is a crime. His failure to disclose this last year, or before that, is potentially an infraction or maybe even a crime. So we learn that Manafort did make a lot of money working in Ukraine. The New York Times still calls the deposing of Viktor Yanukovych as a popular uprising. It was a U.S.-backed coup. And those in the know that. And so this is embarrassing. You know, he's been caught in a failure to disclose and a failure to file forms. But again, it isn't any kind of proof that Paul Manafort was the conduit for collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. Every day I like to stop for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like George Reeves, thank you, Superman. He's never heard that joke before. Jason Ferguson, Janet Price, Joey Perillo, thanks to each of you for your support. And that's my soft sell way of shaming you into coming on over and taking out your own subscription. You just go to peterbcollins.com, find the menu button, click on it, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. That takes you to the sign-up page, and in a couple of minutes, you can set up a PayPal order and kick in $5, $10, $20 a month, or buy our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. I've got bonus books depicted on the sign-up page for new annual subscribers with a mailing address in the continental U.S. Mitch McConnell is a wily guy. He didn't spend a lot of time licking his chops after he had to withdraw the bill that will destroy Obamacare and replace it with really lousy health care coverage. No, instead, he has rewritten the bill, made some markups, amendments, and is planning to send it to the Congressional Budget Office so it can be scored while the rest of the Senate is on its July 4th recess. He's hoping to get a better score and come back and ram this bill through in July sometime. And he certainly did miscalculate his caucus because he kept assuming that they were all on board to repeal Obamacare, and he simply had to appease the most conservative people who wanted to see health insurance denied to 22, 23 million Americans and the complete gutting of Medicaid so that health care becomes a class-based opportunity in this country. If you can pay for it, you can access it. And if you can't, just tough it out, get sick, hope you get well. Hope you don't die. That, of course, is the intent so they can free up money to give tax cuts that aren't needed. And Warren Buffett's been in a couple of interviews on the PBS NewsHour for the last two nights. And he keeps saying, I don't need a tax cut. My corporations don't need a tax cut. What are they talking about? I mean, even Warren Buffett sees this as a huge transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich. Meanwhile, the world is reeling from another round of the release of an NSA-created cyber worm. It's another version of ransomware, locks up computers and demands cash to reopen them. You got to pay by Bitcoin. They're saying that yesterday there was this huge release of this kind of a computer virus, and it started in Ukraine, but it quickly spread to other countries, and it affected many computers around the world, Ukraine, Russia, Poland. The fact that Russia was targeted seems to indicate to some that Russia may not have been the perpetrator of this. But it also spread to other countries here. Let's see, here in Pennsylvania, the United States. In the United States, the multinational law firm DLA Piper reported being hit. Hospitals in Pennsylvania were being forced to cancel operations. The Cadbury chocolate plant in Hobart, Tasmania, that's Australia, had to shut down because they had a global cyber incident. And, of course, this is malware created by the NSA for its aggressive, militarized hacking. And it was stolen by the shadow brokers. We don't know who they are. We don't know how it was released to them. But the NSA has an affirmative obligation to clean up this mess. And corporate IT people are fingering the NSA and saying, look, you guys, number one, you got to stop this shit. Number two, you got to fix what has already been damaged out there. I'm pleased to see that three cops in Chicago were charged in their efforts to cover up the shooting death of Laquan McDonald, a black teenager who was shot on the streets in October of 2014. The three officers were indicted on state felony counts of conspiracy, official misconduct, and obstruction of justice. Jason Van Dyke, the cop who actually shot Laquan, despite the fact that he was running away, he was not threatening the officers. He had allegedly been using a knife, but it's not visible in the video. And Van Dyke kept shooting McDonald, even as he was not a threat and as he fell to the ground. So this underscores my biggest issue with cops in America. When bad cops commit crimes, good cops cover up for them, and they use their authority and the credibility that is often invested in them to baldly lie in order to cover up crimes. And this is a very serious issue. It goes on every day in this country, and it took Chicago too long. Rahm Emanuel enabled the cover-up, but justice is finally being addressed. Now, here's a tough one that I'm going to illustrate with a personal case. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling against a Texas death row inmate who claimed that his lawyer had failed to represent him properly. This is a common claim. It's called ineffective assistance of counsel. It is one of the most common arguments to overturn a conviction and win a new trial. And it's fair to say that people who wind up on death row get bad lawyers to begin with. They're often indigent, and they're assigned public defenders. Then they get a lawyer for their appeal, often an underpaid. Here in California, it's called the California Appellate Project. And then they have appeals of their appeals. And let me specifically give you this example. I have a friend who is on death row at San Quentin, not far from my secret studio. His name is James Anderson. And it's a small world story. He grew up in Cincinnati, just about 2 miles from where I grew up. We're the same age. We have quite a bit in common, except he's black and I'm not. And James Anderson claims that he's innocent of the two murder convictions that put him on death row. Now, I do know that James Anderson didn't get a fair trial. I cannot flatly tell you that he is innocent because I haven't been able to do enough investigation. But after his initial round of appeals were completed, he was assigned a retired state senator as his lawyer. The guy's name was Alistair McAllister. He's no longer alive. McAllister, when he was in the legislature, wrote the bill to reinstate the death penalty in California. He has a deep bias in favor of the death penalty, and yet he was assigned the job of defending a man who was subject to the death penalty. And he made a number of errors that have yet to be corrected in his mishandling of the appeals of James Anderson. And now the Supreme Court basically says that you cannot bring up issues of bad lawyering during the appeals process. They're only interested in bad lawyers in the original trial. It is appalling. And that is your Supreme Court today. The wrecking crew in Washington wants to dismantle some Obama-era regulations that are intended to limit pollution in about 60% of the nation's bodies of water. And essentially, this extended existing federal protections to tributaries and other sources of water in big rivers and, Puget Sound, for example, is one of the examples offered here. And now, Scott Pruitt over at the EPA released a 42-page proposal. It'll take a while, but they're planning to rescind that rule. And finally today, there is a crazy guy named Michael Tate Reed. He claims to be a Christian, but he also says that he believes in the Constitution's separation of church and state. And so back in 2014, when the state of Oklahoma installed a monument to the Ten Commandments at the state capitol, he drove his car into the Ten Commandments and caused serious damage. Well, the other night, shortly after the Ten Commandments had been installed as a monument in Little Rock at the Arkansas Capitol Dome, Mike Reed got in his car, and he did it again. He rammed the monument of the Ten Commandments. It was badly damaged and had to be removed to a state warehouse. He says he hears voices. And while I actually do support the end, in other words, removal of these religious monuments from public property, I do not support the means. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. It's available free, and it's also available every day on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.